welcome to a new episode of Doctor Who Panel to Panel. This is Jeremy Bementz, your host, saying welcome to a new episode and happy Free Comic Book Day. If you're listening to this the day this episode is released, you will know that today is Free Comic Book Day around the world, and it's a chance for you to go to your friendly local comic book store, get yourself some free comics, and also show them some love at the same time. Make sure that while you're there, ask for and get yourself a copy of the Titan Comics Doctor Who Free Comic Book Day issue. This is the teaser lead-in to the 15th Doctor series that will be starting up in a month's time. So make sure you check that out. Make sure you also buy some stuff at your local comic book store while you're there. These comics that they're giving away, they are sold to comic book retailers at a very steep discount, but it still costs them money. And if it's like any of the shops that I go to, they have plenty of them. They've spent quite a bit of money getting those comics into your hands. So I think the very least you can do is send some money their way, buy some trade paperbacks, buy some issues, and show them some support. In this episode of Doctor Who Panel to Panel, let's give you a rundown of what's going on. We're going to start out like we always do by checking out the news, find out what is new in the world of Doctor Who comics. And then we're going to do a couple reviews. We'll start out by checking out the final part of Mancopolis, which is part 5, that was in Doctor Who Magazine, issue number 603, that just came out a couple weeks ago. And then we're going to take a look at a story featuring the 5th Doctor and crew called On the Planet Isopterus. This was a story that was in one of the Doctor Who annuals back in the day that I found in a book that was given to me, so I thought I would do a review of it. And then I have what I consider a real treat. Myself, my kids, my family are big fans of Phineas and Ferb. For those of you who have seen Phineas and Ferb, it's a cartoon that was on Disney. They're bringing it back on Disney Plus. And one of the guys who wrote on Phineas and Ferb is also a big Doctor Who fan. If you go to the Gallifrey conventions out in California, he goes every year. He has also worked on Mystery Science Theater 3000. He has written several books. He has worked on Milo Murphy's Law, lots of Disney animation stuff. His name is Joshua Pruitt, and I had the chance to chat with him for a while to find out more about how he got into his love of Doctor Who, how he got into becoming an artist and a writer, and he's even done a Big Finish audio, so he has some Doctor Who cred to him. I think you'll enjoy getting to know Josh. He's a super nice guy, and it was just a pleasure to chat with him, and I think you'll enjoy hearing from this guy who has done it all. He is a licensed, certified geek. Anybody who's worked on Doctor Who, Phineas and Ferb, and MST3K, you know is all right in my book. So there you go. There's what this episode is going to encompass. I also want to take time to thank you for downloading this episode. If you're new to Doctor Who Panel to Panel, please do me a favor. Give me a positive review wherever you found this podcast. And also download previous episodes. There's lots of really good interviews and reviews and stuff in all my previous episodes. If you check out your podcast feed, you'll also see that not every single episode I've ever done is there. If you want some older episodes, which, trust me, still have really good interviews, good reviews, good news, go to archive.org and do a search for Jeremy Bementz or Doctor Who Panel to Panel, and you can find all the previous episodes of Doctor Who Panel to Panel as downloadable MP3 files, or you can listen to them right there on archive.org. So please check that out. Please let other people know about my podcast. If you know other people that are fans of comic books, Doctor Who, or both, and check out my podcast. I appreciate it. So without further ado, let's get into this episode and start out by taking a look at the news. In Doctor Who comic news for this episode of Doctor Who Panel to Panel, we're going to start out like we always do by taking a look at the calendar to see what is coming out or what has come out. We're going to start out by going to the end of April. On Thursday, April 25th, Doctor Who Magazine issue number 603 came out, which came out over in the UK on the newsstands and also came out digitally. That included the final part of Mancopolis, which you'll hear a review of shortly. And then we'll take a look at May. We'll start out by checking out May 4th, today. Today is National Free Comic Book Day, or actually Worldwide Free Comic Book Day. Make sure you go to your favorite local comic book store, get yourself some free comics. They should have plenty of them out there. But the main one you want, of course, is the 15th Doctor comic that is put out by Titan Comics. It is going to have kind of a lead-in, kind of a teaser for the new 15th Doctor comic that will be starting up in about a month's time from Titan. And make sure you get that. Make sure you also support your local comic shop by buying some stuff while you're there. Those free comics are not free for the comic store. They are free for you. So make sure you help out your comic shop and buy a trade paperback or something or some issues. You know, show them some support. Show them some love. And by my calculations, on Thursday, May 23rd, Doctor Who magazine issue number 604 should be coming out digitally as well as on the newsstands over in the UK. So make sure you take a look at that. We'll have a new comic strip starting up and something to look forward to. One last little bit of Doctor Who comic news. The new May previews catalog came out from Diamond Comics Distributing. And there's an awful lot of Doctor Who comics stuff listed in there. If you go to my website, which is DoctorWhoComics.com, you can check out all the listings of Doctor Who comics and related stuff. As far as related stuff goes, Cutaway Comics have solicited their first trade paperback in through Diamond, which is the Omega trade. If you have listened to Doctor Who panel to panel for a while now, you've heard some interviews regarding Cutaway Comics and Omega and their different miniseries. I highly recommend you check out this trade paperback. Make sure you let your comic shop know that you want to order it, because most comic shops aren't going to be carrying it. If you want to let them know specifically how to order it, the order code is May241497. You can get your order in. It'll also support Cutaway Comics, which is a really good independent publisher. So make sure you check that out. A couple other little tidbits of information in the new previews catalog. We found out now that this 15th Doctor miniseries, or from Titan Comics, is actually going to be a miniseries, because issue number 2 of 4 is being solicited for pre-order. And then Panini have two pages in the new previews catalog featuring new and past Doctor Who trade paperbacks in collected editions. So if you want to get caught up on those and fill the holes in your collection, you can order specific trade paperbacks or the graphic novels of Doctor Who comic strips from Doctor Who magazine. So make sure you check that out. And that is it for Doctor Who comic news. Let's jump into a couple reviews. It's time to open the Bandorica on a new Doctor Who comic strip, and this time we are going to take a look at the final part of Mancopolis. This is Mancopolis Part 5, and it is in Doctor Who magazine issue number 603. The story is being wrapped up, written by Alan Barnes, with art by Lee Sullivan, coloring by James Offredi, lettering by Roger Langridge, and of course Marcus Hearn is the editor. We continue or finish up the story where we left off, with the revolt being suppressed by Mayor Mulberry and the police. The doctor is trying to figure out what to do to stop that. He uses the sonic and a communicator to radio the auditors up above and tell them you might want to come down and take a look. In which case, when that happens, the little cloud formations start coming down, which causes the mayor to attack the doctor. While the mayor's attacking the doctor, Ruby takes the controller off the mayor's wrist, and the cloud formations zap it with lightning and destroy it, which causes the clouds to get switched off and fall to the ground. The mayor then hops into the teleporter to teleport away, but what she forgets is the doctor comments that she's teleporting down to where all the little grubs are, and without her control device, they don't know who she is, and they are going to have their tasty way with her. Once that happens, we discover that there was kind of a false front put on Mancopolis, and you start seeing how the real worn-down Manchester is after all this time. The auditors come down, which are some very cool-looking reptilian people, and they are going to take over the city, although the doctor comes up with a fiendishly clever plan to kind of get them to leave it alone, which is telling them that Ruby is the richest woman in the galaxy, and she will pay to erase all the debt that the city owes. which causes the auditors to leave, and we get our happy ending. I thought this part of the story was fine. It was a good kind of resolution to the story. I kind of liked how the ending was as the Doctor and Ruby leave. All in all, I'd say the story was kind of okay. This story was kind of just average, in my opinion. I don't think it was quite as sophisticated as Liberation of the Daleks was, but it is also a story that is not nearly as long, with it being only 5 parts as opposed to 14. And that kind of got me thinking about the Doctor Who comic strip as a whole, and how normally the Doctor Who comic strip is a 6-page comic. So if a 5-part story, you only have 30 pages to tell your story in, and that's pretty much the length, or just a little bit longer than a standard comic book. Most comic books don't tell an entire story in the span of one issue. Usually it's 4 to 6. And I think that's kind of where the Doctor Who comic strip has been letting me down for the past few years, with the exception of Liberation of the Daleks, because that was a long, extended story, which gives time for character development, time for plot development, time for things to happen, and you can have a more sophisticated story. As I think back to my favorite Doctor Who comic strip stories, I think of The Flood, I think of Voyager, I think of stories that had a lot of room to develop, and they're long, fairly lengthy stories. I think Doctor Who Magazine needs to get back up, or back to a lengthy type story, and let things draw out over the span of like 12 issues or so. Maybe we will only get one story a year, but at least we'll get a story with a lot to it, and not just something that, to me, almost seems kind of like a throwaway type story. I realize this kind of review is looking at the Doctor Who comic strip in general. As far as Mancopolis goes, like I said, I thought it was an okay story. I hope this kind of sets an example that editorial of Doctor Who Magazine take a look at and reread it themselves and go, we didn't give the story a room to breathe and to expand and to have more to it. I think we would definitely benefit, I think the magazine would benefit with more robust stories, more fulfilling stories. So Mancopolis I thought was pretty decent. I thought it was okay. I thought it was an average story. I hope the next story that we get is a longer story. I hope it's something that has more substance to it. And I guess we will just find out. So there's my review of Mancopolis. Exterminate! A very good friend of mine was cleaning house and downsizing stuff, and they sent me an email one day and said, "Hey, I have some Doctor Who books I want to get rid of. Would you like them?" I said, "Sure, why not? Go ahead and send them to me." Well, one of the books that got sent to me was called Doctor Who Journey Through Time. It is a hardcover book that was put out by Crescent Books, and it is was edited by Brenda Apsley. Features stories by Brenda Apsley, Charles Pemberton, and Leslie Scott, according to the cover. And from what I can gather, what I was reading on the internet, basically this is kind of a collection of stuff from Doctor Who annuals from 1986 and before. There's some short stories in here, there's some comic strips. And so I thought I would take time today and take a look at one of the long-lost stories. It is called On the Planet Isopterus. This is a Fifth Doctor with Adric, Nyssa, and Tegan story, and it starts out with the Doctor demonstrating a device called a dream machine. He is able to use this if somebody is dreaming or having thoughts. He can push a couple buttons and make that dream seem very vivid. As an example, Tegan says that she's dreaming of being in a field of flowers, lovely flowers, and as he pushes some buttons, she swears up and down that she's really in this field of flowers because she can smell them. The smells are very vivid. Adric wants to try it, but the Doctor says, "We're about to land," and it turns out they're landing on a planet called Isopterus. Well, Adric says, "Isopterus is Latin for termite, isn't it?" And the Doctor says, "That's right." So as they end up going out and exploring around, they get captured by a group of giant termites. The termites immobilize them. There's some sticky stuff that causes them to kind of paralyze them, and the termites carry them back down, deep down into their nest. Eventually, the sticky stuff wears off. The doctor and crew are able to move around, but they discover there's a giant termite that is holding them captive, or standing guard over them. And that is when they discover there's a bunch of humanoid-like people down there that are the race on this planet that are being held captive by the termites. This race says that the person who's leading them says that we are the termites' last food substance. They have eaten all the vegetation on our planet. We are the last things that they can eat, and that's why they're holding us captive down here. So Nyssa says, oh, we can't let that happen. What should we do, doctor? And the doctor says, I have an idea. I have this dream machine device, and maybe I can program it to make all the termites think that there's vegetation over on the other side of the planet. I'll activate it, let's give it some time to work, and then we'll see if the termites leave. A short time later, sure enough, Adric peeks out, or the doctor asks Adric to check and see if their guard is still there, which I thought was kind of funny, because if the guard was still there, he could have bitten Adric in half, and, you know. Anyway, the guard is gone, the doctor, the crew, and all the people come out, and they start working their way back through the caverns and through the termite nest to get out. And once they get out, the doctor says, well, everybody get into the TARDIS. We will find a home for you, a planet where it's safe, and maybe someday you can come back. And so that's kind of where the story ends. As far as the story in general, I thought the story was okay. It's serviceable. It was geared towards younger readers, as the Doctor Who annual stories were back then. So I thought it was fine. The artwork is okay. There's some panels where we get really good likenesses of the Fifth Doctor and the crew. But then there's other panels that don't look all that great. Adric looks really young. He looks like he's probably about 10 years old in this strip. But for what it was, for a story that was in a Doctor Who annual, I thought it was serviceable. It did its job. It has a little bit of a charm to it. And how can you go wrong with giant termites? So there you go. There is a review of On the Planet Isopteris.
You will be deleted.
Today on Doctor Who Panel to Panel, I have the pleasure of chatting with somebody who I discovered on what used to be called Twitter, now is called X. Is somebody who, if you go to the Gallifrey 1 conventions out in California, you've probably seen him wandering around because he goes to the conventions. But he is somebody who is special to me because my kids grew up watching Phineas and Ferb, and he was one of the writers and storyboard artists on Phineas and Ferb. He also worked on Milo Murphy's Law. He worked on Hamster and Gretel. He is a writer. He is a storyboard artist. He has done a Big Finish audio, and his name is Joshua Pruitt. Josh, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. A pleasure to be here.
Now, I don't know how many people are familiar with you or you know, all those things I just mentioned, but I know you're a big Doctor Who fan, but first I wanted to get into a bit about your career, and how, you're a writer of various different things, you know, from animated stories to Big Finish audio to you've written a book or two. Mm-hmm. How did you get into writing? Have you always wanted to be a writer?
I think I did, and I made kind of a hilarious switch up in my career, is that I figured that learning how to write was really like, you know, rear end in the chair, and that I thought I should, you know, pursue an education where I can, you know, get paid to do a trade. So I picked art, the second, you know, very practical choice.
Sure.
But I was really passionate about storyboard art and concept design. When I was a kid, I wanted to design monsters. But when Toy Story and Prince of Egypt came out, I was in high school and watching kind of the behind the scenes on the Pixar films, I was like, oh, story looks like where I want to be because you draw and you write.
Yeah, you bet.
And so it was kind of that combo that was really intoxicating to me and where I wanted to kind of position myself. I started out in production at DreamWorks and worked on Over the Hedge, Shrek the Third, and B-Movie before submitting to their story trainee program, and got in, which was kind of miraculous for me at the time. And so I was a storyboard artist for about 5 years at that studio before kind of transitioning into television and on to Phineas and Ferb.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So you kind of started off kind of going the roundabout way of doing the artwork and then getting into the story.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you talk to folks who work in animation, you know, certainly everyone's got their own path. And so I, at some point, realized that my superpower really was writing and that my drawings, you know, I was a pretty good artist and a pretty good storyboard artist, but I was a better writer. And so I was getting, you know, more attention and accolades and, you know, for being someone who would punch up a joke or come up with some good concepts for, you know, how to structure a story. I seemed to have good instinct for those things. And so that job kept looking more and more like a writing job as opposed to a storyboard job.
Okay. So you kind of were able to come up with some story ideas. And then if you needed to, you could do the storyboarding as well and kind of help the animation side along with saying, here's how I picture this.
Precisely. And in some cases, it's been a great tool for me to pitch my stories, you know, because folks don't want to read anything, right? Like people don't have a lot of time. But being able to look at an illustration or a series of storyboards or an animatic with, you know, voice, sound effects, and people respond to that just faster. So it seems like a great way to kind of pitch stories to folks. So, yeah.
Sure. And I would think somebody who was interested in animation would kind of grew up reading comic books. Were you a comic book fan back when you 100%. Were a kid? Did you ever think about trying your hand at doing comic books?
Yeah, I really did. When I was in middle school, kind of the Image Comics saga kind of hit. And so I was buying all of that stuff, the Spawn and Savage Dragon, and just, you know, I loved all of it. I was reading New Warriors at Marvel. Fantastic Four was like my first comic that I ever got, so I love them with all my heart. And I'm a comics fan kind of through and through. It all ends up being part of my geek DNA is kind of how I put it.
Sure. I think that's all of us have that part in them. You know, if you're a fan of any of this in any way, shape or form, you have that DNA within you that makes you interested in all of it.
That's right.
So it's on the Doctor Who side of things.
Yes.
How did you get involved in being interested in Doctor Who?
Well, I had, you know, a circuitous route, right? Just like everything that I do, apparently. I first saw Tom Baker. I saw the Fourth Doctor when I was a kid on KPBS. I was visiting my dad in New York and got scared. I think there's like two episodes that I conflate that... not sure 100% which one it was, but I ended up like hiding behind the couch, and I didn't realize that was a universal experience for a Doctor Who fan because I didn't have anyone to talk to about it at the time. But yeah, KPBS really they introduced me to Who, and then, you know, was a fan for many years. And when the relaunch happened, obviously I fell back in love with the series. I think at some point in my career I had been writing what they call licensed material. So I had done a book for Avatar: The Last Airbender. My writing partner and I, Scott Peterson, had adapted Jon Favreau's Jungle Book back into a novel. I've done a short story for a Predator anthology called Eyes of the Demon. So I was doing this licensed material, but my dream was to do some Doctor Who expanded universe stuff. So, you know, I think we all as Who fans know that during those dark times, right, it was the comics and Big Finish that was keeping, you know, Doctor Who alive.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I started doing some research, and I was like, who's doing this stuff? Like, who's writing this material? And so I started following folks on social media and reading up on people's career, kind of following their trajectory. You know, a name that came up over and over again was Jack Rayner. And, you know, she's written some of the best, you know, Sixth Doctor stuff around. And when I sought her out on Twitter, her profile picture, her icon, was Vanessa, one of the characters from Phineas and Ferb. So when she saw that I was following her on there, it was kind of started up a mutual admiration society. She couldn't believe that I worked at Milo and Phineas, and I couldn't believe that she's, you know, been writing Doctor Who for 20 years. So there were a couple of times where there were these cattle calls, open calls for Penguin UK, and they were doing some spinoff material. And at one point, Jack was kind enough to kind of put my name in the hat for those gigs that didn't pan out.
Okay.
But I kept trying. So I would enter some of the big Finnish competitions. And one time I actually got some good feedback on one of my submissions. So I got close.
Okay.
And then during the pandemic, Jack took a job to be producer of the Sixth Doctor Adventures. And she emailed me out of the blue one day and offered me to write a Sixth Doctor Adventure.
Oh, awesome.
And I got to tell you, Jeremy, when I read that thing, I cried. I was so blown away. I'd been dreaming of getting a shot to write Doctor Who for years. And actually got the chance. So this was the Hebe and Mel and Sixie. And got to write Hebe's first adventure in the TARDIS. So it's on the Waterworld box set. And it is called Tides of the Moon. It's the second of three stories on that first box set.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how was that experience? Not just having the joy of being able to write a Doctor Who story for you, but how was the experience working with Big Finish and coming up with a story?
Oh, it was amazing. I had been sitting on a lot of ideas. And so I pitched Jack and our story editor, Rob Valentine, who's a gift, a lot of different ideas. They helped me whittle down what they liked. And then I ended up writing a script that was almost twice too long because I did what any Doctor Who fan would do, Jeremy, is that I kitchen sinked the thing. I put in all the ideas I ever had about Doctor Who.
If you think this is going to be your one shot to tell the one story that you have, you want to include everything that you have, you've always wanted to do.
100%. So Rob was, and he's, and, all deference to him. He's one of the best editors I've ever worked with. But he was like, Josh, you don't have to do the cloister bell in this story. And it's like, okay. And so there's a lot of material that I cut out, and maybe one day I'll get the chance to do another. Luckily I've actually just this year I finished my second Who for Big Finish. It won't be out for some years. But certainly I'll come back, I'll hit you up again.
Sounds good. Comes
back around. But yeah, I'm hopeful I get to do more because I would do it for the rest of my life. I love writing for Doctor Who. I adore it.
Well, that's awesome. I think Big Finish is rather notorious for scheduling things years out in advance and having things done, well ahead of time. So that's good to hear that you got a second story with them. So for you said you got into Doctor Who more when the series started up again in 2005. So then did you start, as well as watching the TV show, did you start reading the comics like when IDW was putting them out? Or
I absolutely did. Essentially I kind of glommed on to the work that Matthew Dalsmith was doing.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Because I think one of the things, I have lots of strong feelings about Doctor Who comics. And one of them is, when it comes to likeness, I think it can be a real make or break deal for the penciling, artist.
Okay.
So some folks are really great at it, right? That high bar is Dave Gibbons, right? And certainly some of the work that Steve Parkhouse did years ago, and John Ridgway. But it's really, for me, the stylization that Smith kind of brought to it, especially in that IDW stuff, I just thought it was a perfect kind of synergy between what we are accustomed to in Doctor Who comics and bridging the gap to modern comic books. And I just think his stylization just suited and supported what Doctor Who comics can be in an extraordinary way. I adore it. I even own some of, Matthew's original art. from one of the books he did. Yeah, just because it's, I just think it's fantastic.
I agree. You know, I appreciate his artwork. I think it definitely has a style of its own to it, and I always kind of likened it to like Mike Mignola Hellboy art.
Yes,
that kind of angular line style and lots of shadows, lots of darkness to it. But he still is able to capture the, not like a super close likeness to characters, but he captures the kind of the look and the feel of that character.
100%. 100%.
And is able to make it his own and to tell a story of his own.
Yeah, I agree. There's like an essence that I think he is very adept at capturing. And so it feels like you're watching an episode, right? When and that's what's, I think, kind of cool about Doctor Who comics, is that there's a greater kind of width and breadth of ability, because you can do anything because there's no budget, right?
Yeah.
It's what the artist can draw and what the writer can dream up. But like, you still want it to feel like the show. So I feel like it's an interesting, you know, tightrope to walk. It's similar to writing for the audio, is that you know, there are strengths of the audio format that you want to lean into, and there's strength of the comic book format that, you know, I've observed that these really talented teams lean into, and kind of, you know, they stretch at those boundaries. They push at those boundaries.
Yeah.
One of the other folks that I really, really love and ended up, you know, kind of seeking out for the early Titan run too, was Simon Fraser on the 11th Doctor stuff.
Oh, sure.
I also really, I loved that sense of caricature. And there's something about that. It's almost cartoonish. Like, there's like, when people say cartoon, I think some folks can be dismissive. But what I mean by that is, it's a stylization. So it's like what Fraser's doing is, the whole environment feels of a piece. And so his version of the 11th Doctor is at home in that environment. And so the world feels very consistent. And oh man, I love that.
Yeah, I agree. Simon Fraser definitely he's another one that has kind of a style of his own, and, I always thought his artwork was kind of reminiscent of like Alan Davis type art, which is more closer, I would say more closer to like a traditional comic book style than you would say like Matthew Dow Smith is. But he also has that look of his own, and the way he captured the likenesses of the 11th Doctor. And I was thinking he was the one who had the Absalom Dak up here.
That's
and
right.
Just the look of Absalom Dak in there, just to me, was very reminiscent of the stuff that was in DWM back in the day.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
So you've been following on with Doctor Who comics. Have you ever thought about doing a Doctor Who comic? You know, maybe approaching like IDW or Titan and saying, "Hey, I want to try my hand at doing comics."
Oh, I would love to. I've been kind of obnoxious about it on social media. But honestly, it's like, I don't necessarily have a connection over on that side of the world. I've been, following Jodi Hauser's work for many years, and have bumped into her at conventions and had the opportunity to talk shop with her a couple times, and really loved, you know, her ability to kind of capture 13's voice. And I thought that was really phenomenal. I think it was good times, Jeremy, when we had three or four kind of Doctor Who books running at the same time. And like, those were some heady times. So I'm hopeful that with the new 15th series that, you know, maybe they'll do some more minis and maybe some more kind of shorter anthology stories. I mean, I would love to see any of that, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree. It feels like we've kind of been in a drought as far as Doctor Who comics go. You're exactly right. When Titan got the rights to Doctor Who, and it was still really going strong, and we were having consistent, you know, seasons coming out and stuff, having all those comics, at the time it almost seemed like it was too much of a good thing to have all those comics coming out. But then we kind of went from there to the opposite end of the spectrum, where outside of the comic strip that was showing up in Doctor Who magazine, we would have an occasional mini series that Titan would put out. And even now, you know, the time from the last comic that Titan had put out until the new one that comes out here in a month, it's been a long time with not much to read.
It's our own dark times for the comics, right? It's our own. Yep. It's the wilderness years again.
Wilderness years part two.
Part two. Yeah, it's funny. You know, I really enjoyed the work that, you know, Paul Cornell and Christopher Jones were doing, you know, with the Seventh Doctor and the Third Doctor minis that they did. Mm-hmm. You know, Christopher Jones is another artist whose work I just really love. And, you know, Cornell is a Doctor Who superstar in my mind. And, you know, I think that there's room for all of it. I think that's what they proved, I feel like, is that when they were kind of running on all cylinders, Titan really proved that there was room for all of it. Mm-hmm. And I think in light of the new regeneration, like, I feel like there's even more room. Like, there's even less reason, in my opinion, not to do it. And, you know, having a second Doctor book out there just for three or four issues, God, that would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I would love to see them do a mini, continue on with the mini series of past Doctors, or even maybe do like an anthology book where you had like two, you know, a couple stories, like maybe a 10th Doctor story and another past Doctor story in there.
Absolutely.
A little something different. And then there's so many Doctors to choose from. I think a book like that would sell to diehard Doctor Who fan.
Absolutely. Yeah. My dream, you know, I think anthology, I think you're onto something there, because I feel like what you could do is do a book that's got short stories that has different artists doing different Doctors and mm-hmm. establishing different tone for each one, and then, you know, see what takes off. Another kind of internet mutual, an artist, Blue Fruity, at Blue Fruity, they have a really wonderful cartoony style. Like, that was one of the things I was obnoxious about at Titan, just being like, hey, you know, let us team up and do a comic book, a Doctor Who comic. Because I think one of the things is it would be great to grab kids. And I feel like kids are very apt in this original graphic novel world. Like, the kids that are reading, you know, Dogman or, you know, Last Kids on Earth that are graphic novel adjacent. Like, you know, I think you could do some really fun Doctor Who stories that are geared as introductions to the Doctor. So that's the kind of stuff that I would love to do. Because I think that'd be a great way to get new eyeballs on the Doctor. And Jeremy, I think that's our job, right? That's what we gotta do. We gotta spread the gospel of Doctor Who.
No, I totally agree with you. I think that would be great, having some like some younger reader books. You know, DC has done a really good job of coming out with some young reader books that are kind of change the look of, you know, or take a different approach to like Batman and Robin. Mm-hmm. And they had there was a book that had Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman as like teenagers, like the Super Secret Society, I think is what it was called, that was geared towards younger readers. And I think you could do something very much along the same lines, you know, introducing Doctor Who to kids that way.
100%.
I think you're totally right. I know this is kind of a loaded question for you, but being a Doctor Who fan, everybody has to answer this at one time or another. Which Doctor is your favorite, or which one would you really like to do a comic book of?
I think I love all of them. Crappy answer.
Well, I always go the same. I think we all pick the same answer. I usually say I love them all, but for various different reasons.
That, and I think that's a fair response, because that's what's so beautiful about it, right? Is the Doctor is one and all, right?
Yep.
So for me, it's like, the way I do it is like, okay, Tom was my first, right? So fourth is my first Doctor. So nothing will ever replace the love that I have for my first Doctor. But yeah, I tend to vacillate between 10 and 7.
Okay.
Because the thing that I love about 7 is that I think because of all the material in the wilderness years, I feel like I will never run out of stories that I haven't read. And
yeah.
About the Seventh Doctor. So I'm kind of obsessed. I love that. I love that it's like a treasure hunt that I get to have as a Doctor Who fan, like for the rest of my life, because I'll never be able to find all of them. And I certainly won't have the money to buy all of them, but I can try. So I adore that. And then, you know, between 10 and 14, like just some like I loved those last three specials. Like, man, and I just feel like that experience with that Doctor and with David Tennant is so unique in the history of Doctor Who. I think he somehow manages to be like the most human and accessible of all the Doctors. But I love the Bohemian Alien in the Fourth Doctor just as much. And obviously, it's like writing the Sixth Doctor was like an unbelievable pleasure, because again, it's like when you're dipping into these personalities, it's like to be able to lean into their strengths, you know, and to be able to like, oh, cool, I've got to get a little bit of Colin's self-righteous indignation into my story. Otherwise, it's not a Sixth Doctor story.
Exactly. You're not capturing part of the essence of the character or that version of the character.
And like leaning into those superpowers for that Doctor was an absolute pleasure for when I was writing that story. So it's like that is a joy that you get out of 6 that you may not get out of 5. And that's what makes each of those experiences, I think, so wonderful. I think it's interesting how, because of all those performances, we all get to fall in and out of love with Doctor Who all the time. And that's as a fan, like that's all I want out of anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking to somebody recently about Doctor Who, and I said that's one of the great things about Doctor Who as far as the TV show goes, is that when you have a new actor take on the role of the Doctor, or a new producer come in and showrunner and do their thing, if you watch an episode or two and you go, I don't care for this version of the Doctor or this version of the show, you wait a couple of years and it's going to change and you're going to have something new to watch, and maybe that will be your cup of tea. Or
that's,
you know, you can go back over the history of Doctor Who and go back to your favorite Doctor and just watch those again. Or like in your example with the Wilderness Years, you know, if you're a fan of the Seventh Doctor and haven't read any of the version novels, you have a wealth of wonderful stories just at your disposal to jump into.
Mm-hmm. And Big Finish too, right? It's like I haven't listened to everything, you know. Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, and me being a podcast about Doctor Who comics, there's, you know, Doctor Who has been on for 60 plus years, and there's just as many years worth of comic strips as there is, you know, seasons of Doctor Who to go back and read through and enjoy. For And you have lots of different incarnations of the comic strip as well to go back through and read, from the silly 1960s First Doctor with his grandchildren, comic strips to you know, the galaxy spanning Voyager story from Parkhouse and Ridgeway.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty to choose from. So I think that's absolutely one of the things I really love about Doctor Who that kind of puts it above other sci-fi franchises like Star Wars or Star Trek, is yes, Doctor Who has just as varied or as vast a universe as Star Trek and Star Wars do, but with Star Wars and Star Trek, you don't get the same variety of stories and that you see with Star Trek and Star Wars. I think for me, those are pretty straightforward, especially Star Trek. Star Wars has a little bit more with like the animated series that they've done, which kind of gears more towards a younger base. Mm-hmm. But as far as like the different genre or methods of storytelling for Doctor Who, it's just so vast, just like the premise of the story itself. There's not a type of story you can't tell with Doctor Who.
Yeah, there's an inherent flexibility that makes like Doctor Who really unique. And the fact that it was designed for younger audiences, and I think is for me, this is part of the appeal, is that that's evolved to be all audiences. It's not just for kids, but it's something that I can watch with my whole family. And I love that. And that's one of the things that I love about why I work in animation, is that I think that's a, it's a worthy challenge to write something that everybody could watch, that, you know, your great uncle and your 2-year-old, you know, 4-year-old nephew, you know, can all watch the same show and love it. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that speaks to its longevity, because not many things are like that.
Yeah. I totally agree. That's one of the great things about Doctor Who. And along those lines, you being one of the writers of Phineas and Ferb, I think I mentioned to you before, Phineas and Ferb is one of the animated shows that my son and my daughter grew up watching as kids. And it was a show that I enjoyed watching as an adult for, you know, it's almost like watching a Bugs Bunny cartoon. There's things about it that adults get that go over the kid's head, but my wife, who is not an animation person by any means, she really enjoyed Phineas and Ferb as well. It's one of those shows that I think anybody can get into it and enjoy. And I know we're all looking forward to the return of Phineas and Ferb on Disney. And I want to thank you for being back in the reins or back working on that show. And I'm glad to see its return. And also thank you for kind of reaching out to me and us getting together to chat about Doctor Who comics. It's been a pleasure to learn more about you and about how you got into writing about Doctor Who comics. And I look forward to chatting with you again, hopefully not by the time your next audio comes out from Big Finish, because that could be a couple years down the road.
But yeah, hopefully before that. Hopefully before that. I appreciate all that, Jeremy. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for time today. Super appreciate it. And would love to throw out a plug really quick to your
fans. Besides Phineas and Ferb, what all do you have going on?
Yeah, so coming out April 30th, so it'll be in stores by the time this airs, probably, is The Last Comics on Earth, book 2. It's called Too Many Villains. So this is a original graphic novel series that author Max Brallier and illustrator Jay Cooper and Doug Holgate and I do. And it's an official spinoff of The Last Kids on Earth. So this is the animated series that I actually worked on with Max. And the book series that Max does with Doug. But this is, it's literally kids making a comic, Jeremy. So it's the characters from The Last Kids on Earth that go to their local comic shop, and the story takes place in the apocalypse. So they realize they've read every comic that will ever be made, and there aren't any more. And so they do what any kid would do, is that they have to make their own comic book. So it started with The Last Comics on Earth, book 1, which came out last year, and Too Many Villains, book 2, will be in stores by the time people hear this. And we do lots of fun. It's very funny. It's very goofy, because the kids are writing it themselves. They're writing themselves into the story. So, you know, it has that very, like, handmade quality, but it's an absolute celebration of comic books, you know, in this wonderful graphic novel format. And yeah, it'll be out now.
Well, I'm definitely going to have to check it out, because that sounds like a great premise. And I'm going to have to go to the bookstore here in town and pick up the first volume.
Oh, please, please. And I would love to hear what you think, Jeremy.
Oh, well, I would definitely check it out. So, yeah, thank you. Success on good, or I hope you have great success on that. I hope there's going to be more of those, because that idea sounds really great. I think any kid who's a comic book fan has dreamt about creating their own comics, and I'm interested to see what you and your team came up with for Lee's story. So I'll definitely check that out.
100%. And hey, if I figure out a way to get Titan to get me to write some Doctor Who, then I'll come back. And we can talk about that.
You bet. Sounds great. Well, Josh, it's been a pleasure to get to know you and meet you, and we will definitely chat again soon.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. Have a good one.
A big thank you to Josh Pruitt for joining me on this episode of Doctor Who Panel to Panel. I think you can tell by listening to my chat with him that he knows his Doctor Who comics really well, and he is somebody that I really had a, it was a treat to talk to him. He's hard at work on the new Phineas and Ferb cartoon. He has this new book came out that he wrote, The Last Comics on Earth, which I'm going to go out and grab myself a copy of. And he's just a super nice guy. He knows Doctor Who, and he is somebody that I just have wanted to chat with him for quite some time, and I hope you enjoyed the chat as much as I did. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Doctor Who Panel to Panel. Thank you so very much for downloading this episode. Be sure you check out previous episodes if you haven't already. There's lots of good interviews with Doctor Who comic creators, whether it be writers, artists, editors, past and present. Lots of good listening material for you there on your podcast feed or over at archive.org. Thank you very much once again, and until next time, this is Jeremy B. Ment saying bye. Doctor Who Panel to Panel, the podcast about Doctor Who comics, thanks you for downloading this episode. Let us know what you thought about this episode or of Doctor Who comics in general. You can find us socially on Facebook at Doctor Who Panel to Panel, on Twitter at Doctor Who P2P, 2 being the number 2, and online at DoctorWhoComics.com. Download previous episodes via your favorite podcast service and find the complete catalog of episodes featuring amazing interviews with creators past and present at archive.org. Just search for Doctor Who Panel to Panel. Thank you.